space. So I just wanted to be very clear. We're not just sitting back and waiting for someone in Peru to call me and say, somebody in Cairo is not following your pick. We will take any input. We will follow it. We will make sure it's not frivolous, that it's true. And if it is, it is enforceable.
Thank you, Fadi. We have Shireen Chalabi and then Evan Leibovich and then back to Adam. Shireen?
So I support everything Chris and Fadi said. I also want to make a comment on, you mentioned the PAB. There's been recommendation or ideas and requests from individuals to the board about establishing a public accountability board as a mechanism for monitoring. To repeat it again, we don't make policy. So you have to give us consensus advice on this. But to send us a private initiative, we're not going to react to it. We need a consensus policy because we do not make policies.
Thank you very much, Shireen. So Fadi?
Yeah, one more thing that I just remembered. You mentioned that an applicant can voluntarily, unilaterally, on their own, say, I no longer will abide by that pick. Not true. Once it's in the contract, it's in the contract.
Thank you very much, Shireen. Fadi, sorry. Evan Leibovich.
Hi there. 2 points. Fadi, this isn't about what's enforceable and what's not enforceable. We've actually seen, and in fact, in the public comment that we've posted, there are links to examples of PICs where the applicant says, we reserve the right to modify at our whim or even withdraw parts of this PIC whenever we feel like it. And so, yes, it's enforceable, but if what's enforceable doesn't exist or it's been withdrawn because the applicant is allowed to do that, then there's not much left to enforce. And on the issue of getting community support or, you know, getting the wheels in motion, part of the problem with this has been one of process. The public comment that's out there on this issue right now is only the third time the ALAC has had to put out a public comment in its existence. And the reason for that is because a request was made to the board to make a public comment, period. That was rejected. And so we, on our own initiative, did that. You ask about, let's get consensus, let's get community support. We tried to do a public comment period specifically for the purposes of doing that. And in the rejection of the board's willingness to accept that public comment, we initiated that on our own. So you're asking us to try and gain consensus. You're trying to ask us to start a public policy process in mind. The public comment process was an attempt to do just that. And the only reason that the ALAC is doing it right now is because a request was previously made and it was previously rejected. We're trying to do what you're saying, but it has to start somewhere. Starting somewhere is with that public comment process. Thanks.
Thank you, Evan. So I've got Alan Greenberg, and then back to Chris Despain. Alan?
Thank you. A couple of points. First of all, as Evan said, yes, the PICs are enforceable. We're not claiming they're not. But if a registry has a provision in the PIC saying, I may erase it, I may change the provisions or erase it, then there's nothing effectively to enforce left. Yes, you're enforcing a blank PIC. So yes, we understand that. The issue of whether a PAB is policy or not, we can debate that. I don't want to start in this venue what is policy and what is implementation today. The PICs, however, were introduced by the board without going through the process. And if the PICs were made sufficiently strong with an appropriate mandatory PIC for regulated industries, you know, forget the whole other part. You know, clearly we don't have 2 years to go through a PDP right now. And none of us have the stomach for that. And, you know, I would question whether a PAB is really policy or not, or the implementation, but I don't want to go there. I've had that discussion far too many times. And yes, the issue of compliance and you're ramping it up, we're delighted. And yesterday we met with Maggie, and she said there is a process that if someone submits a form saying that someone is in violation of a PIC, that action will be taken. But we know there is concern about being overwhelmed by frivolous ones. and you don't want to make compliance an infinitely large department. That's not to anyone's benefit. So all we would like to see is something published describing how is it you plan to enforce the PICs. If you're doing it already, just tell us about it. And we've been asking that, sadly, for a year now, and that's part of the important part. It doesn't address the regulated industry issue, but it does address a large part of our original concern with the PICs. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Chris Despain.
Thanks. Two things. One, I'm happy to listen to discussion about the PICs and so on, but it's really important, I repeat myself, to make the distinction between a voluntary PIC and a mandatory PIC. The fact that an applicant has voluntarily agreed to put some PICs in place is entirely their decision, and if they have chosen to say in their contract, and as far as I know there's only one applicant that has, that they can withdraw those at any time, then so be it. They are the voluntary PICs. They chose to put them. They weren't asked to. They had nothing to do with GAC advice. They just chose to put them there. The mandatory PICs cannot be withdrawn. They are there. That's it. So really, that's the key. So if you're going to start talking about, it implies that PICs that come from the GAC advice, etc., can be withdrawn, and that is simply not true. And finally, in respect to regulated industries, we have safeguards in place, negotiated through the GAC advice, that protect supposedly quote unquote regulated industries. That's what we have. The GAC provided with us advice. We worked with everybody. We've come up with these safeguards. So, again, characterising the situation as if regulated industries are not covered by some form of safeguards, you might not think they're enough, but the GAC seems to agree that they are. So, really, it's not correct to suggest that the regulated industry TLDs are out there with a free rein, because they're not.
Thank you, Chris. Fadi, do you want to jump in before?
Yeah, I just want to commit to all of you that by ICANN 50, we would have published a complete document describing how we will enforce the PICs.
Okay, thank you, Fadi. Ray Polzak.
Thank you, Olivier. Alan, you said something, and I know the context in which you said it, but I think it's worth noting. You said that you didn't want to go through a PDP because that was painful. The day that it is painful to make policy is a very dangerous day for ICANN. And like I said, I know the context in which you said it, and so it's not an aspersion at you, but I think it's something that we need to remember, that sometimes the most difficult policies to enact are the ones that are the most important, the ones that require the most discourse amongst people, the one that requires the most compromises to be met so that you can gain a broad consensus. So we should never, ever be afraid to embark on a course of a difficult policy process to get to a good end. Again, it was not a personal aspersion to you, but you made a comment I thought it was worth commenting on.
Thank you for this, Ray. With the gala last night, everything feels painful this morning. We have Evan Leibovich.
Hi, I just want to respond briefly to the assertion that the GAC is satisfied with the status quo. Based on conversations that took place at a meeting with the GAC yesterday, I think we may beg to differ, and so we'll be having a look at the transcript of the meeting the GAC has with you a little later on to see whether or not things are as satisfactory as you might seem to think they are.
Can I just respond to Evan? Evan, the key, you can have whatever conversations you like with the GAC, as do we. The key with the GAC is the communique. It's what they say in their communique that is the only thing that really matters. They have provided us with advice. We have responded. We told them how we were going to implement their advice. This was two meetings ago. At the last meeting that we had, we went through it with them again, and their communique was fine. So whilst I'm more than happy to accept that individual GAC members might have concerns or you might have concerns, etc., the point I'm trying to make is the GAC has responded to us in its communique in a way that indicates that the way we are proceeding is fine.
Thank you, Chris. So we first have Bruce Tonkin and then Alan Greenberg and then Shireen Shalabi. Bruce?
Yeah, thanks, Olivia. I think we need to be very careful that we separate the development of the rules for the operation of the industry from the enforcement of those rules. And I think we've been in danger of blurring those things. And that seems to be the perception that we have this new GTLD committee, and it does both. It creates policy and it enforces the policy, and it does compliance and does everything, apparently. I think what you're starting to see is that the new GTLD is starting it's coming to the end of the first round of the new GTLDs, and now we're talking about how we manage the rules of the whole industry going forward. So I'd really encourage it's actually time to come back and start using the policy process, because that's where the rules of the industry are developed. And the ALAC actually there's a provision in the bylaws that the ALAC can actually start a policy development process, starting with an issues report. Use that. Because this whole area of regulated industry, categories, it's very complicated, and it's absolutely what the policy development process is designed to do to address those issues. That's where that should go. Enforcement, completely agree with you. You know, the staff should actually clearly explain what the enforcement mechanisms, that is the job of the compliance department.
Yes, thank you, Bruce, and thank you for these thoughts. I think that's very helpful. Alan Greenberg?
Thank you. Two replies. One to Ray. I have carefully never tried to calculate the number of hours, days, weeks, and whatevers I've spent in policy development working groups, including the two PDPs that the ALAC did request issue reports for and then follow through to successful completion. So, yes, I don't think I am afraid or any of us are afraid of the PDP process. All we were saying is we probably don't want to do it now and delay the whole this whole process. There's certainly no intent to say we don't either understand or plan to use the policy development process. My original comment was basically saying, if indeed PABs are policy, and that's a question I don't want to have the debate about today, then let's try to find a way that has a smoother path forward on this particular issue. That's really all it amounts to.
Thank you, Alan. Shireen Shalabi?
Well, actually, Bruce said what I was going to say very clearly. The NGPC is not an enforcement body. You have just got to make understand that. But the other thing I'd like to do is we've got to kill this notion once and for all that the PICs are not enforceable. They are enforceable, as said Fed, and he published something. And on the other issues, we have to follow a process at all times. And we're just not going to divert from that. So if you want us to implement something, we need to have consensus policy. As simple as that.
Okay, thank you very much, Shireen. Evan Ibrovich.
Sorry, my only answer to that were PICs created specifically as a result of a PDP. I mean, if this wasn't created by a PDP, you're saying they have to be replaced by a PDP. This, I guess, is something I find a little strange.
I wasn't talking about that. I was talking about the PAB.
We can parse this as deep as you like. There is a difference, I think. What you're talking about is creating an authority that has the right to enforce, as opposed to us. You're talking about creating an authority that has the right to enforce. And that is something that is an additional policy piece over and above what is currently in the contracts, which talks about using contractual law to enforce and using the PIC DRP to enforce the PIC. So there is a difference. And let me also stress that the PICs, whilst people might have got upset about them, were that, you know, we got the GNSO community to accept that these were necessary pursuant, first of all, voluntarily, which was never a problem because they were volunteering, and then mandatorily through the GAC advice. So they came in through a process. The process was the GAC advice, going out, talking to the community, coming back, the board, the NGPC working on it, and then going back to the GAC and saying, this is how we propose to implement. So there was a process for that. It's not correct to... it wasn't policy, but I don't think that means you can then insert a whole new mechanism in there which, without going through the policy process.
Thank you very much, Chris. And I think we can probably move on to the next part of our agenda, number two. So, The next topic is the globalization of iron function, next steps. And just to introduce this, as you know, this has been one of the hot topics at this meeting so far. It's interesting, initially we had this as internationalization of the iron function, then it became globalization of the iron function. I think it's now transition, or iron function transition. The reason why we've put this as a proposed topic is because there is a genuine concern from the community that looking at the different diagrams and the different avenues which are currently being proposed, on more than one cases, the end users don't appear to be fitting somewhere, somehow, in the whole thing. So, yes, Steve.
So I listened attentively to multiple questions or comments focused on that. I'm puzzled. What precisely does it mean to have the end user involved in this? And I ask, not because I'm opposed to having the end users involved, where the whole purpose of running the net is we serve the users, but the IANA function is a publication of key parameters for the operations. Those parameters are generated by the operators, the root server. I mean, the TLD operators give us their parameters to publish in the root zone. The address supporting organizations, we have the address space that's published, and the IETF creates protocol parameters and we publish on their behalf. Where does the end user come into that, and what does it mean for them to be involved in a substantive way? And I ask for information, not because I'm opposed in principle, but I don't understand where the traction is.
Okay, thanks, Steve. First, I think Kwewe put his hand up, and then I've got Sandra Hofer-Richter right at the back, and then Ray. Kwewe.
Thank you. I'd like to comment about this IANA function, globalization, whatever you try to talk about. I was IANA committee chair for 2 years, and first of all, I think in general in the community, I don't know how many of you ever read the IANA committee report in the past several years. I think in several years in this IANA committee, in the ICANN community, most of the energy we emphasize on the new GTLD, but not many of them actually ever try to read the IANA committee report. And I also like to admit, part of the, you know, my responsibility. I think supposedly we should make the IANA, you know, the operation is more transparent, open to everyone. But I promise you, you know, actually, as I know, is we are working on right now is we are expecting the IANA office to come in out with a regular report. And we try to make that report as much readable for the general public because in the past, most of the IANA report is very technical, to be honest. It's very difficult to read. And we try to work it out to make the report really easy, and at least for general public can read it and what they are doing. There is several of the reasons to doing that. The first of all is you know, let the people really understand what is the IANA operation doing. You know, without the IANA's function, you fully understand, it's really difficult to. We are talking about the globalization of IANA, and what is the purpose and how we can, you know, oversight it or whatever. So I think the first job we need to do is to make the IANA function and operation is very, you know, readable for the general public. The second of all, I think, you know, we began to talking about is there in the board, you know, the Steve Newland, we try to talking about is there any possible we already look in the possibility to make the INA report regularly, and then I think the next step is to make the report is public and to, you know, the whole community can read it. And so this is the first step, that make the INA report readable and the transparent and also in public. And then we can begin to talk about the globalization issue. I think that is something what I think we can do.
Thank you very much, Kruwe. Sandra Hofrichter is next.
Thank you, Olivier. It's Sandra Hofrichter speaking. There is a demand to organize this transition process as a multi-stakeholder manner. What I can make different to other organizations is that it includes the end user to every key processes to a very big extent. And I think we should follow this this way of the, or we should follow this multi-stakeholder here as well. Of course, the end user or the at-large community will not be involved in the operational issues of the AENA function. But I could imagine that the at-large organization could observe the process in terms of accountability and transparency. And also it was mentioned yesterday in this session that we can actually expect national consultations all over the world. And I think here the large community can collaborate, for instance, with the GAC to organize such national consultations and bring the message to each country what's going on here in ICANN and what's all about this. And I think that's a very important thing, doing and organizing the national reach out, beside being involved in the setup of the process as a, so to say, as a watchdog. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Sandra. We've got Fadi, Steve, and then we'll get back to our queue, which is Ray, Holly, Sebastian, and Chris. So, Fadi?
Thank you, Sandra. Let me also put this to bed. At large and the users have to be part of these consultations. In fact, I'm demanding it. You have to be there. There's no question that you need to be part of the consultations. You saw very clearly on that graphic that we put out that we're not here, we cannot get bogged down in the implementation and operational side. That is governed by our relationships with the people who make the policies and the specifications. Believe me, the people at the IETF and IAB check very clearly how we do the implementation of their policies. And there are tough meetings we have with them regularly on our service levels there. That's their job because it's their protocol. Now, what we're asking you to please be involved in is in the process of accountability that was, even if symbolically, maintained by the United States government as well as the IAB in the case of protocol parameters, or by the RIRs and ASO in the case of the numbers, etc. We're asking you to help us design and strengthen, if necessary, the current mechanisms. You need to be there. So if the optics of yesterday was, how come at large was not on the stage, was because we had a very delicate situation to manage on who gets on stage. There were many CCTLDs. Well, should we invite all 200 CCTLDs to be on stage? Some of them don't have a voice in the ICANN structures. So in a way, they should be on stage. So we had to limit who's on stage to the organizations that were on that grid. Right, just to make it simple. But by no means, I apologize if the optics of that sounded like we don't need at large or the users. Quite the opposite. Without you, this consultation is not fully legitimate. So please be there.
Thank you, Fadi. Steve Crocker.
Thank you. I completely agree that at large and the users need to be part of the consultation process. Thinking through the next step when you get into the consultation process, what will be the substance of it? What will be the what will the people who are involved in the consultation focus on? What kind of questions? What kind of conclusions will they come up with? So let me be a slightly challenging here. How many people here actually think that they understand what the IANA process is and how it works? Well, there's Ray and Susan. You guys don't count. You're just not at large. Well, we think we know where you are. You're not. You haven't escaped, and so you're not at large. Sorry, bad joke. But I don't see any. I don't see any non-board members' hands up. Am I, Alan, Olivier, okay, and Evan?
And we've got Alan Strickland from New Zealand.
Alan Strickland from New Zealand as well.
Good.
There's a few.
It is an administrative and bureaucratic function. It's got an operational component to it. There's a way in which things get done. It can induce deep slumber. It is sort of at its core pretty boring, but it's worth knowing how it works. And I was thinking as we're sitting here that maybe a step that we could arrange early on is to have a little bit of some mechanism to expose or train or teach people how it actually works in some depth, either. Come visit, or we'll do a teach-in, or something, or just a webinar, walking through the nitty-gritty details of how each component of the IANA process works, and that might be helpful to either horrify or demystify, or whatever the reactions are. Over to you, Olivier. I see various hands up.
There are a lot of hands up at the moment, and we've got a number of people wanting to jump the queue. So Edmund, I think, hasn't spoken before.
Sure. I wanted to respond to Steve's question earlier on directly. You asked whether, you know, it seems like there's an assumption that the IANA products, if you will, or information is not really consumed by the end users. I kind of beg to differ because there is the IANA Whois database and even the protocol parameters that increasingly end users are becoming a little bit more technically savvy and are consulting those databases. So end users do take a look at it, especially with all these new GDLDs coming in. That is a database where end users start to explore this stage, and especially when we talk about the public suffix list issues, which are now being progressed at different areas, the IANA function there is very much an interest, but from the end users. So,
thank you, Edmund. Let's go back to the queue. Evan, did you, because you said you wanted just 10 seconds.
Yeah, just that one of the things that Large has always been involved with is trying to make some of these topics accessible. And so before we can truly engage the at-large community, we've got to make this information accessible to them. We've done policy briefings and a number of things. This is a role we can play. We need some help in doing this. But, you know, seeing some of the media reports, there's so much FUD out there about this issue. And so we probably have a role to play in trying to minimize that. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Evan. And capitalizing on this and having heard Steve earlier suggest a webinar, I think that would be an excellent idea. Another possible suggestion would be to have a beginner's guide. We've had a number of beginner's guide to at large, to getting involved as an at large structure, etc. And I know that there are beginner's guides regarding getting involved in ICANN. Maybe a beginner's guide on IANA might be a good idea. I don't know who would follow up on that, but perhaps I can ask our staff to.
Oh,
you can?
Sending the email.
Perfect, fantastic. That's very good, and that would be really helpful. Let's get back to the queue. We have Ray Polzak, Sebastian Bachelet, and Chris Despain. And sorry, Chris, I know you've been waiting, but it's the queue. Ray.
Thank you, Olivier. I actually have some comments in regards to what's been going on with the interventions by the queue jumpers as well. Let me address the last thing you just talked about. There is a wonderful opportunity at an ICANN meeting for the at-large to talk to the people that actually deal with the IANA function. What precludes you from going to the ASO to find out from them how they do their business with IANA. What precludes you from talking to the ITF persons that are here about how they do their business with IANA? I mean, you're talking to the direct source. They're here. You know, this is supposed to be a community endeavor. We're supposed to work together as a community, so why don't we do that? Before we go charging off and writing a new beginner's guide or whatever, let's do a little fundamental research. And maybe get them to come into one of your sessions and talk to you about it. I mean, they'd be more than willing to do so. In addition, you got people like Suzanne Wolf who actually did this. I'm sure that Suzanne would be more than willing to come do so. I'm sorry if I'm speaking for you, Suzanne, but as well as I know you, I don't see where you would be shy about doing that. So take advantage of the resources that you have before you charge off and create a new source. I want to go back to something that Fadi said and then to actually start with where Steve was, extending Steve's original comments. And actually he said something more to that same thing again about the fact that what the IANA does is an administrative operational process. And quite simply, it is it. IANA does not decide what to put into the root zone. It does not decide what to allocate. It does not decide which protocol parameters to do. They are told what to do. The IETF says to the IANA via an RFC, the IANA considerations paragraph, do this. And IANA has no other choice but to do this. When the IRRs put together a global policy about how the IANA should allocate IP addresses to the regional registries, they don't have a choice. They have to do this. When the GNSO, through its functions, decides upon what is an acceptable, unique string, a unique identifier, i.e. a new GTLD, IANA is told, do this, which is put it in the root zone. So IANA doesn't make any of these decisions. Fadi referred to the symbolic role that the U.S. government basically has. It's a role that they've been doing symbolically, which is the approval. So what we really need to talk about, if the removal of the U.S. government from this process, i.e. this last approval authority, is removed, do we really need to have one? Quite frankly, when it comes to protocol parameters and IP addresses and autonomous system numbers, the answer is no. When it comes to unique name identifiers, the answer should be no, because people in the past have used that method to politically try and get their way one more time because they were unsuccessful in the processes that they helped establish to produce these unique identifiers. So one of the things that, and this is where the end user community can come in very strongly about, is are we sufficiently confident in the processes and procedures that we have today that are in use by the IETF to put things into, to tell IANA to do things about protocol parameters and port numbers? Are we sufficiently confident with the policy processes that exist within the regional registries to tell IANA what to do as how to allocate IP addresses? Are we sufficiently confident about the fact that the unique identifier that's identified, i.e. the successful GTLD, that IANA can go ahead and put that in the root zone? If we're sufficient and with that, we have the accountability mechanism. It's internal. What we may want to consider at some point in time is whether or not you want to have an appeal mechanism alongside that. But to date, there has been no real need for it because there are appeal mechanisms that exist inside those bodies for it to occur. So I would like you all to think in that direction. Remember that IANA is doing what it's told to do. It would never do anything on its own. They can't. And think about the way that we want to remove that approval mechanism that the U.S. government has never exercised. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ray. And you must have been reading our minds, because the ALAC is meeting with the ESO this afternoon to discuss specifically the INA function. So that will be a good interchange that we'll have with them. Going through the queue, and I realize that we are going to run out of time in a few minutes, we still have Sébastien Bachelet, Chris Despain, and Fadi Shahadeh. So you just put yourself off the queue, or you're back?
I'm back.
You're back. Okay. First, Sébastien, and then Holly, and then we'll continue. Sébastien Bachelet.
Bonjour.
Hi. I'm going to speak French because we can. To use foreign languages instead of English. As you know, ICANN is a very small organization, does not have too many responsibilities. IANA is even a smaller organization with very little responsibility. So let's go. There's nothing to do. You are the final users, but you do not need to interact. Everything is already done for you. I think that this way of explaining the discussion, the current discussion when it comes to globalization for IANA is a little bit short, my dear friends on the board. It's very short. The total discussions around the TLDs, first of all, I said TLD. I didn't talk about this G or the CC. But that needs inclusive until the delegation. This needs to be a vigilant exercise from the users. I would take first an example. When the team in IANA, the team who is in charge to do the work, delivers a report on delegation, there is a place in there that says, has there been a connection with the local community? And each time that subject is raised, I ask the question, was that done? And in general, it was, well, maybe, yes, but nothing has changed. Because the government asks, and the government has the last word. Therefore, it's like yesterday. It's a problem of image. There's no more contract between the government and IANA and the end users and IANA. And the guy on stage was not ALAC. It could be good to start with bringing some kind of equality between the stakeholders, and then we can discuss seriously of globalization of the ICANN and of IANA. Thank you.
Bastien, next is Chris Despain.
Thank you, Olivier. Two points. First of all, picking up on what Edmund talked about and Sébastien has just spoken about, everything they've said is actually probably true. However, it highlights an issue that we have yet to sort out, which is the scope of this piece of work. It is not about IANA's operations. It is not about the way that IANA does its work. It is about replacing the US's role. That is not the same thing as saying, how can we change IANA to make it better? That may need to happen. That is a separate piece of work. If we imagine we can conflate those two and get them both done at the same time, We will never finish this work. We need to remove the USG from the game, replace them with whatever they need to be replaced with, and then we can start to look at what else can we do. And my second point in respect to the discussion about at-large's involvement, let me assure you that in respect to any work that the CCNSO does for their piece of this, the at-large will be involved. I don't know what the GNSO situation is, but from the point of view of the CCNSO, and I can tell you it's in the CCNSO, that the CCNSO's requirements for a USG replacement will be discussed, at large will be involved. And of course, Olivier, as you know, the Framework of Interpretation Working Group is a classic example of how we do these things. At large is involved very vocally and very usefully. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Holly Reich.
It's really just to pick up a comment that Ray made and it has been made in terms of, I suppose, informing ourselves and in terms of the need for cross-community consultation. I'd remind you, yesterday we had three really interesting sessions, two of which were conflated into one. It was about the privacy proxy services and the EWG. Because of all the other events that were going on, we took those sessions and made them into one, but we had participation from various constituencies in the GNSO. We had a lot of observers. We had ALAC. We had everybody around the table and a lot of heated debate. Well, heated. Vigorous debate, which probably is the best example I've seen of bottom-up multi-stakeholder. The next session, we got one of the SSAC members out of bed in California to talk to us about tour routing, so we actually do inform ourselves on technical issues. It was a very interesting session. Again, we had a lot of people from various constituencies around the table. We'd like to do more of it, but because the way the schedules are set, we're all scheduled into silos, and so we have to deliberately say, we are now going to hold a session, it's open for everybody, and it's going to be on topic that are of interest generally. That's what we're trying to do and have done successfully. And I just like people to not talk about us as not being either interested or informed or not wanting to understand what's going on.
Yes, thank you, Holly. I've only got one person left in the queue, but two of your board members have also asked to speak, Steve, so I don't know whether you, because we've reached the end of the allocated time, so I don't know if you want to...
I think we can take three more minutes, max.
Three more minutes, which means we've got three more people. So there's Fadi, Shireen, and Kuwait.
Thank you. From my perspective, users must be informed. They should participate. I already sent a request that we issue an actual short course on how INA works, and we will put it on the learn.icann platform. We will do it immediately. And I'll involve the people who know so that we can share that information with everyone. Everyone has the right to be informed, and we will do that. Number two, the input of the at-large community in how these functions are accountable to the global community is important. It's different from saying, you know, we are going to get involved with, you know, which server technology you'll use. That's our business. We'll do it per the service level agreements given to us by the policy owners, by the IETF, by the... So we will follow these contracts and we will implement. But we need you all to be involved in how we're accountable. And my last point is please, please, please appreciate that there are two tracks that we started yesterday. There is the track related to IANA and how we replace the USG role of oversight in the IANA functions. That's important. And please be involved in that. Equally important is that you get involved with the accountability of ICANN as an organization. This is probably for us as a family, as community members, if not equally, it's more important even. This is the moment for all of us to be involved in that. And finally, that these two tracks, as some people are saying out there, cannot be independent. Absolutely. I don't know where they got the idea they'll be independent. They're just different consultation tracks that need to happen, but they'll inform each other, they'll stay completely in sync, and in fact, when we think about it, it's probably likely they will have the same timeline. They have to, because these two things have to be addressed together. But please appreciate, one is an ICANN discussion, an ICANN-led discussion, an ICANN community discussion. I am not going to hold a meeting at the IETF to discuss ICANN accountability. But I will hold a meeting at the IETF and with the RIRs and with the CCTLDs to discuss how we transition the IANA stewardship. So these are two different things. They're interrelated. They inform each other. They're both equally important, and please do get involved with both.
Thank you, Fadi. Just to add, amongst the various bricks that the U.S. government was providing with regards to the IANA function, as we know, one of them was accountability, but one of them is also enforcement. The at-large community is well aware, and this is, I guess, one of the reasons why we have brought the matter on the table, because we do have a number of points to make in this matter. We have Shireen and Kwewe, and then we'll have to close. Shireen Chalabi?
My point is a very small one, but you keep on saying globalization of IANA function, and this is wrong. It's globalization of IANA stewardship. It's written there on the screen, and it's wrong. And it creates confusion by using globalization of the function. It's globalization of the stewardship.
Yes, thank you, Shireen, for this. As I mentioned, the name's changed a number of times. Now it's called IANA Transition. It's moved on. Maybe tomorrow we'll have another stewardship now. Okay, here we go.
No.
I'm a few hours late.
We'll play teacher here. You're not repeating the lesson properly. It's stewardship of the function. It's not a substitution of function versus stewardship. There's the IANA function. There's the stewardship of the IANA function.
Okay, stewardship of the IANA function. Let's hope it remains the same until the end of the week. We'll have Kwewe.
Okay. I think the Ray and also the Chris already mentioned about, and you know, and also the Sebastian. And I will really recommend if at large, you know, AOS, if you are really interested in to, you know, looking around what is the IANA operation, try to remember one thing. IANA office, basically all the operation, just like Ray say, for example, the CCTLD delegation or redelegation, is based on certain principle. You know, it's not random. It's based on the GAC and also CCNSO, you know, guideline and the principle. So I would suggest you, if you have a question about it, try to read the principle and see if anything we can improve. But always remember, because a delegation, re-delegation, if you are thinking about it, if you are a CCTLD operator or if you are the GT operator, when you want to do the re-delegation stuff, they want the administration work as short as possible because it impact to their operation and something like that. So we might be can do a regular, you know, study, but it definitely cannot one by one, because once you delay to the, you know, the delegation or redelegation for the operator managers, it really is a effect of the internet operation and, you know, stability and, you know, the availability situation. So I would suggest if the end user of AOS, if we want to see that, take a look about the guideline and principle, is anything we can improve, but not go into, you know, interrupt into the daily operation, because that is I don't think we're talking about the internet is a fast moving. We don't want to slow down this stuff, and you know, and also making the internet operation is unstable. I think that is not our purpose. So that is my suggest.
Thank you very much, Kwewe, and I think that we are in violent agreement. So with this, we've pretty much run out of time. So Steve, thank you very much.
Thank you. These encounters are never dull, and which is good, because at this point in the week, if they were, we'd be sleeping, I think. But joking aside, thank you very much. This has been very helpful, and I think we even have an action item that we'll pursue here quickly. Board members, 19 minutes from now, we stay here.